You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Great ways to start this, but all of them making fun of the title would give away the actual plot to the movie, like the reveal. So I'm like, okay, so I've got nothing to start this.
I thought that we would say, you know, it was a great film about infrastructure and how America is just behind on high-speed rail, and we just need to get with the 21st century.
Did you fall black out during this film?
That's how I remember it happening.
Totally different movie.
What about How I Learned to Stop Being Creepy on a Train and Then Stop Drinking?
Yeah, that's more or less accurate, although one would hope this is not an instruction manual for doing
there
that.
Was actually a moment 5 minutes into this film where I'm seeing her in the train station with her water bottle, and I was like, oh, that's, she's healthy. She's conscious, you know, like, and then it's like the next scene, you're like, oh.
Not so healthy. Or
yeah, that's
conscious.
Not water in that water bottle. Yeah.
I'm now immediately distrustful of anybody with those big, giant water bottles.
I already.
Who needs that much water?
Already yeah. am. Already.
That's true.
I'm like, I would trust them more if it was vodka, because I'm like, oh, that's smart. It never occurred to me. Yeah, okay, no one's the wiser. They just figure you're some hippie.
Well, you know that they can solve crimes, so, I mean, that gives you a superpower.
What, water bottles?
No, hiding all your vodka. Yeah, drunk people.
Yeah, the story here of the girl on the train follows an extremely broken alcoholic woman, played by Emily Blunt, who is, by far, in a way, I think, herself, just the best thing about this movie, her performance.
It's
pretty good,
it's too bad that she's not in a better film, because this would be an Oscar caliber performance from Emily Blunt.
It's I think people tend to kind of underestimate how difficult it is to act drunk and do it well, because some people are like, they really exaggerate it, but she kind of plays it perfectly.
Well, it's not even doing like the stumbling around, which which I mean physically is kind of easy enough, but like the slurring and it's just like,
well, yeah. And she had a lot of help from the, you know, the production of this film, which I think did a great job in those moments where she's really trashed, simulating that feeling you get when you're like looking around and your eyes aren't going as fast as your head's moving and everything seems to be just a bit jarring and slurred.
I try not to get that drunk.
And you're not doing it right.
Possibly. But she plays Rachel Watson. When we meet her every day, she's, you know, titularly riding on the train and looking out her window in a very unhealthy way at the house she used to live in with her ex-husband, Justin Theroux, who now is married to another woman and has a kid with her. But, like, even though that's eventually what we get to, at first she's looking at one of the neighbor's houses where there is a really, really ridiculously hot lady who hangs out on the front porch all the time with her really, really ridiculously hot husband.
Luke Evans.
Evans.
They've never heard of window blinds or curtains.
That's
or
the one thing.
Like,
I mean, they're doing it just like, you know, and it's like this, what is this, like this sun patio where it's just all windows. It's like, come on, you know.
You know that guy in your neighborhood with the giant TV who always leaves the sports on so you can see it while you're driving through?
Yeah.
It's like if that guy was hot and had a hot wife and just had sex on the
I looked as good as those people, I would totally leave my windows open all the time.
Fair enough.
I'd be like,
enough.
Check this out.
Yeah. I probably would.
If the people that live along that train track, like, I wonder if those people know, like, people can see in their house.
Yeah.
They're going to see this movie and go, oh, shit.
Never occurred to me to close my windows before. I thought the train was going too fast. But you see, for a drunk woman, the amount of blurring she
has
cancels out the effect of the movement of the train.
Time slows down.
People have the power of slowing down time.
Yes, they do. But as this goes along, we find out that, like, she's, like, dangerously obsessed with her ex-husband, is calling him all the time, is following him around, has done some pretty sketchy stuff, blacks out regularly. She's living with, like, an old friend of hers, played by Larpa Pond from
That
70s
Show.
Yeah,
I recognize
Seems
her.
Like everything she's done since That 70s Show, she plays like a goth. Have you noticed that? Like, every time you see her in anything else, she's like a goth. That's apparently her thing.
Orange is the New Black, she's kind of played like a goth, right? Orange is the New Black?
Yeah.
She's on that show.
Exactly. So as it goes along, it's in its very fractured time sense, we see that she's, like I said, equally kind of obsessed with this other couple and with her, when one with her, you know, her former husband. And when she sees the other couple, the hot young thing, by the way, do you remember, was that Rebecca Ferguson or
Haley Bennett?
Haley Bennett, yeah. Who's a welcome new addition to acting in Hollywood, yes, as far as I'm concerned. When she sees her apparently making out with another guy other than her husband, she's like, okay, like immediate, like, fuck, I had this, all these fantasies about how they were this perfect couple when real love exists and all that, as opposed to my fucking ex-husband. And so she's very distressed. Gets on a total bender, comes home not remembering what happened, just covered in blood.
And vomit.
And a head wound, so apparently her own blood.
Head wound.
And then turns out that Haley Bennett has gone missing. And the game is afoot. As, you know, no one knows for sure if she's dead or what. But all Emily Blunt's character knows is, fuck, I can't remember what I did that night. And is it possible I did something to her without meaning to? I mean, there's a lot of like, wow, she sure does look a lot like your ex-husband's new wife, which she does.
Yeah.
And there's a tie there between them as well, because she was their nanny. And the, you know, the police with Allison Janney, who I always love to see, is such a great actress.
She is. Oh, yeah. Great House Cards.
Is, you know, dogging at her heels, as well as dogging, of course, at Luke Evans' heels, because nine times out of ten, if
the guy did it.
Yeah. You know?
Well, yeah.
Nine times out of ten in a relationship like that. But we're really kind of, it's an offbeat detective story in which she's trying to put together what happened that day and reconcile it with the facts, and making unfortunate decisions, you know, with involving herself in these people's lives, because she has to believe that she's not capable of something as bad as actually doing this.
Yeah.
But even though she realizes it's possible that she did, because she can't stop drinking.
Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting is, if you look at what just the central plot of the story is, her trying to solve this mystery. That is something you would do, like a drunk person would do. Like, you wouldn't do that if you were sober and in the right mind. You'd be like, oh, I'm too close to this. I should probably just step back.
Yes. Yeah. That would be the sensible decision.
No, guys. But for real, we got to solve the mystery. We got to solve it right now.
Yeah. You know, you watch too much Scooby-Doo as a kid.
It's like, why don't you lay down, honey?
You need a new suspect? I'll give you a new suspect.
Yeah. She's like, I'm full of fucking suspects.
Oh, I don't know the neighbors. Maybe I should go introduce myself.
Yeah, I think, like, for me, the thing that didn't work with this is that ultimately I found the actual solution was kind of like 30 minutes in, when you do the math of mysteries, you're like, okay, there's only two people it could be in any sort of murder mystery sense. And I'm pretty sure I know which one of them it was.
Because,
because the movie is dodging so far away from them and getting close to them. You're like, but they're definitely a possibility. You know, you're like, okay, it's got to be them. So I'm like, all right, which I don't always mind, except that this film plays the game that it's revealing new stuff to you, not as the character discovers it, but as whenever the movie feels like revealing stuff to you.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of like, well, that's not really fair, because if we had
unreliable
this
narrator
from the get-go, then we probably would have put this together a lot easier. You know, it's not just stuff she's just learning all the time. But there are moments that really do work. There's a nice moment with Lisa Kudrow, who plays Justin Theroux's former boss, with Emily Blunt, that really is like a sort of one of those, like, whoa!
It's a big reveal moment.
Big twist. Yeah, that's actually pretty well handled, I thought. But overall, it's just kind of, I felt like the actual direction here was kind of workmanlike, much like the previous films by this director, Tate Taylor, who did Get On Up, which is a acceptable James Brown biopic, or The Help, which is an acceptable film about racism.
Yeah.
Made me feel bad, so it worked, right?
And I feel like this is an acceptable murder mystery, but it's certainly not as good as that Fincher film.
It's not as good as Gone Girl.
Yeah, it's nowhere near as good as Gone.
It's an acceptable attempt at, like, because even down to the music scores, like, I think Trent Reznor did that score also.
Yeah, and what's his name? Atticus.
And yeah,
something.
Agus Finch.
Agus Finch. And, yeah, there are moments where this movie does try to replicate that score, and it's like, come on, guys. Like, yeah. You're not
Danny Elfman is not from the same school of thought as Trent Reznor. They're both equally talented, but maybe Elfman should do his thing, and Reznor should do his thing. I mean, the last thing I wanted to see is Reznor doing the score to Beetlejuice 2.
Right.
That's all.
And listen, like, seeing it on the screen now, like, I wouldn't have guessed that Danny Elfman did the score for this movie.
No.
I would have guessed it was some...
It's not really in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I would have guessed it was some no-name just trying to...
This movie's keeping the lights on at his house.
I guess the thing I most like about this are the female performances, which are across the board really good, from Emily Blunt, most notably, who just nails it. And then newcomer Hayley Bennett is quite striking, both just physically, where she's just gorgeous. And as an actor, she's given a lot of time, because there's so many flashbacks in this, to really, you know, give it her all, and it's a strong performance from a newcomer.
You mostly see her as like a kind of broken...
See a lot of her.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
You mostly see her as...
She's like, it worked for what's her face in Wolf of Wall Street? Fuck it.
Yeah, they even have a necrophilia scene. Oh, sorry.
No.
But I wasn't kidding about that.
Yeah, she's mostly emotionally broken, but yeah, there is a moment in the movie where she... does kind of have to emote a great deal, and yeah, I think she nails it.
Yeah, and then Rebecca Ferguson, who plays Thoreau's new wife, also through most of the movie is not given a lot to do, but when she does, when she is given her moment, she does it all with it. So all three of them really make this film more watchable than the script even deserves. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I think the one nice part about the story that I can say is the B story with what's her name? You're just talking about the blonde that's like the
newcomer, Hayley Bennett.
Yeah. Her B story, you think it's just kind of a run of the mill B story, and then kind of towards the middle, she gets a lot to work with. Mm-hmm. And that there are a few points where you're like, oh, where's the story going? You know, she's got some drama along with Emily Blunt's character.
Yeah.
And it did give you some meat there.
Well, most of her B story where she gets a chance to just give it her all is in her therapy sessions with Edgar Ramirez, who plays her doctor in here, who also, of course, eventually is a suspect.
Yeah.
Like, as everybody's a suspect. What if everybody did it? Like the good ending of Clue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Or Murder on the Orient Express, which is what Clue stole that from.
Edgar Ramirez is someone who I think is really
mystery
talented.
Nerd.
I love Point Break remake aside, I think he's pretty talented.
Oh my god, he was in the Point Break remake. That movie was shit.
Wasn't he? Wasn't he Bodie?
Bodie, that's right.
Don't watch that movie, people, seriously.
I've already seen it.
It's burned my brain.
Yeah. Besides that, I think he's pretty talented. A little bit underused. Like, seeing a runtime of 112 minutes, like, I would have maybe found a way to squeeze 8 more minutes of him, that B subplot into this. I feel like it would have fleshed it out a little more.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he's basically the character who we get Hayley Bennett's chance to really see what she can do, and she really can deliver. And I would have gladly watched more of that. Like I said, that this is one of those films where, like, I got most irritated with the fact that it's uses flashbacks in such a manipulative sort of, like, okay, where this mystery is only solvable in the context of when we decide as a movie maker to parse out the information.
What we're showing you.
Exactly. And that can work sometimes if everything else is great, but here, I said everything else was just kind of workmanlike.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, I've never read the book, and I wonder just how many liberties they actually took with the source material to change it. You know, if it had like a similar type of structure that the film does, that'd be kind of confusing for a mystery novel, especially when you have so many flashbacks. Typically, you'd follow only, you know, one character. I mean, like a detective, like something like Hercule, you know, the Poirot or something like that, right? Where you're just following him and his investigation. With this is a little more complicated, and maybe it worked better as a book. I mean, honestly, I just thought this movie just had really bad pacing, and where it's like the first half hour, or maybe 45 minutes, it's just like, you're following Emily Blunt, like, which again, she's doing a great job, but it's just her, you know, reminiscing on that train about this perfect life that she wants to create for herself, and she's, you know, she's coveting these people's lives. And it's just like, okay, I get it. Can we go on? But no, we just have to take several more train rides, you know, to see all these people doing all the various naughty business in their sunroom.
It wants
so
badly to be more artistically profound than it actually is.
Yeah.
And I think that's the movies that more often than not end up being such a slog, where you're like, you're just not there. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a more conventional approach would have made, like a tighter approach would have made this a better film, where I don't care if I can predict who the murderer is, if things are moving, if I feel tense all the way through, but there's so much navel gazing going on here.
The real tense parts of this film weren't necessarily to do with this murder mystery, but they had to do with when she got so drunk and her friends are just like, oh, honey. Just calm down, like, settle down. Like, ooh, this is tense.
Yeah, you brought up a good point. There was points when Emily Blunt's character, I thought she would, like, attack someone. Because you don't really know. Like, oh, she's going to bite her face off here? Because I'm thinking, this movie has to do, like, a really crazy thing right in the middle of it, where it's like, well, maybe she's the killer, maybe she's the one that did everything. But, I don't know, I expected that come on. Someone who has not read the book. So I was like, maybe I hyped it up a little bit for myself, because I know that this book is really popular.
Yeah, Harris, Dr. Nerdlove, read it, and he told me he hated it.
Okay.
But I'm curious, because when you start getting into the third act, there's definitely more stuff that has to do with, like, complicated gender relation stuff and commentary that, like, I can't really talk about without giving away too much.
Exactly.
But, but I wonder if it was stuff inside of that that really bugged him. I'm not really sure.
Hmm.
I didn't have a problem with that per se in here, other than it just seemed a little obvious.
Yeah.
But
the characters that you introduced, I mean, there's no one left.
Yeah.
I don't think the cops did it.
What's the great thing about Agatha Christie? She would have like 15 suspects.
She did. She did. Yeah.
And you're like, well, fuck. I don't know.
And in the end, it was always Alice and Janney.
Would have been great if it was the cop the whole time. And like, what?
Yeah.
We forgot to tell you the parts where the cop was having an affair with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. But yeah, go into final thoughts there, Chris Herman.
For the most part, I just thought this was pretty disappointing. I thought, like everyone says, Emily Blunt, Hayley Bennett, and to a much lesser extent, Rebecca Ferguson, like, she doesn't really have a moment until the very end. And again, I just don't really particularly like this character, especially when you learn more about her. Other than that, again, just poorly paced. And I don't know. I just kind of left with one. Okay, I'd rather see a Gone Girl again, quite honestly. So I'd probably give it 4 out of 10 shattered glasses.
Okay.
It feels a lot like something, like my mom or my aunt would come to me. Oh, we should check this movie out because I read the book. And then the whole time, it feels a lot like somebody adapting a book. Like one of those, kind of newer murder mystery, like a Gone Girl, but not done as well. I'm not feeling great about it. Probably something you want to wait and watch at home. I'm going to give it 5 out of 10 punches on my Metro Pass.
It's weird how sometimes you can have a great cast and it can be a not-so-good movie and you wonder how that can happen. Even more rare is the great cast with great performances that still don't equate to a good movie. That's a hard one to pull off. There's a bunch of missteps here. It's just not as strong. I think it's close in some areas. Emily Blunt, I think does knock it out of the park. She has a couple of really good Leaving Las Vegas type monologues where she's just wasted and
yeah.
Just, I mean, delivering a really great performance like you saw it at a Nick Cage in that movie. Missteps all around. It does that one of those annoying murder mystery things where once it's plainly obvious who done it, it goes on for another 15-20 minutes before it, like, you know, does the before it's fully resolved, and it's like, we know who did it. Like, just move it along. We've got things to do. great performances. I may revisit it again, but yeah, given the choice between this or like Gone Girl or like, I mean, a bunch of other murder mysteries, I may revisit those before I revisit this one. But, I would give it 6 out of 10 miniature liquor bottles.
Everything you guys said, I point out as well, Justin Theroux, who is like 9 times out of 10 kind of a block of wood himself as an actor, he's not terribly charismatic. He's just good looking, and that's the bulk of what he has going for him. Here, pretty much the same thing. You're like, okay. You're really not doing much with this at all. Even when he's in a sequence where he should have a lot to do, he's the least interesting person on screen, by far.
Yeah.
This just, it should have been a lot better than it was, even with the kind of predictable script. it felt like there was stuff to do here. It felt like maybe the director was on the right path with really making it a character piece about Emily Blunt. But yeah, but when there's a point where you realize when they're actually going on into the mystery, I'm more bored with that than I am with just finding out more about Emily Blunt, who's more interesting than the murder mystery itself. Yeah, I, you know, as a movie, this is a 5 out of 10, but I give it an extra bump up to 6 because of just how strong those female performances are. They really are that good. And I give it 6 out of 10 ironic bottle openers. Yes, that seems appropriate.
I was going to say, there were two moments in this movie, I won't mention them because I don't want to spoil them, where the crowd just busted out laughing. And they were like tense moments, like not intended to be funny.
Yeah.
But the humor just hits so good.
Yeah, and not in a way they intended at all, I think.
I'm wondering
if
they're...
not usually a good sign.
I wonder if they're going to catch that before it's released.
Now, by the time we see it week of, it's too late.
Oh,
they can't go back in the editing bay and thinking, oh.
Yeah, they ruined it. No Oscar for you, girl, on the train.
It was a special treat for us, though.
But drunk people are there for us to make fun of.
Maybe if we'd seen it drunk, we would have liked it better. Yeah. I don't know. Or we were just falling asleep.
Yeah.
Or been like, I'm totally going to make love to Emily Blunt.
And then we wake up and we're like, that movie was so good.
I would totally still do a super drunk, wasted Emily Blunt.
But you know, that's not appropriate at all, right? Yeah. You're like, you put her to bed and you're like, shh, we'll talk in the morning. And then maybe you'll have sex with me.
Do you get like super wasted with Emily Blunt and you wake up the next morning and you're like, we had sex and it was so great. And you're like, no, you didn't. She just like slapped you around a little bit and you fell asleep.
That does seem more likely for any of us to be fair.